Hey, this is Ed. So this is a podcast, is that right?
This is.
Okay. We're officially podcasting right now. That's awesome.
This is Straight from the Cutter's Mouth.
Welcome to Straight from the Cutter's Mouth, a retina podcast. At least once a week, we aim to bring you insights and perspectives from the world of vitreoretinal surgery. I'm your host, Dr. Jay Schreather. Today, for episode 243, we have a special episode about ophthalmology residency applications for the 2020-2021 cycle. This is a unique year for many reasons influenced by COVID-19, where applicants may be conducting virtual interviews and may have to decide on their rank list without physically seeing a program. There are several strategies for approaching this application process and the interview season from the program perspective and the applicant perspective. To get this unique view, I've asked three residency leaders, Drs. Nandini Gandhi, Chris Alabiad, and Tom Edding, to join me for a roundtable discussion. I would advise people who are listening to this to also take a listen to Eyes for Ears, that our fellow podcasters also put together a similar panel with a different group of directors, and hearing from different perspectives may be helpful in kind of designing your approach to applications, or if you're a program, designing how you may conduct your interviews. As always, you can find our podcasts on our website, retinapodcast.com. You can claim CME credits for this episode and other podcast episodes by clicking on the link in the episode description. None of the contributors had any relevant financial disclosures to the content of this podcast.
Straight from the Cutter's Mouth is now happy to be joined by three ophthalmologists with a strong interest as well as professional connection to residency applications and to residency training to discuss the 2020-2021 residency application season. First, in alphabetical order, my colleague and friend here at Bascom Palmer, Dr. Chris Alabiad. Chris, welcome, and for the audience, just state kind of your role in residency and medical student education.
Sure. Thanks for having me on, Jay. I am actually the Assistant Dean for Student Affairs at the University of Miami, so I deal with a number of medical students applying in all specialties, and I'm actually involved in the residency as the Assistant or Associate Residency Program Director at the Bascom Palmer Eye Institute.
Terrific. Next in alphabetical order, Dr. Nandini Gandhi from UC Davis. Nandini, thanks for joining us, and again, for the audience, and the medical students listening, kind of state your role.
Hi, Jay. Thanks for having me. My name is Nandini Gandhi, and I'm the program director of the ophthalmology residency at UC Davis, and along with other program directors around the country, trying to navigate the post-COVID or inter-COVID interview season.
Last but not least, Dr. Tom Oding from University of Iowa. Welcome.
Hi, Jay. Hey, thanks for inviting me. You've got two of my absolute favorite people in medical education on this line with Chris and Nandini. And I am the program director of the University of Iowa, and I have done that job for a long time and been on the interview committee for residents for probably 20 plus years. So hopefully I can add a few tips, but basically mainly get out of the way so that Chris and Nandini can help us.
Well, I appreciate all of you taking the time, and the medical students, and also I think the programs and people involved in programs we'll be interested to hear your thoughts. So a couple of questions just to start. So, and I'm going to start with, we'll work backwards. I'll start with Dr. Oding. And so the first question is, what is the biggest change from the AUPO, ACGME, from the SF MASH perspective? What are kind of the biggest concrete changes we know about residency applications and interviews this year? And specifically, the timing of these applications relative to normal, the format and interviews, how interviews will be scheduled. What are kind of the things that are already sort of set in stone?
Well, I think by far the biggest thing is that we're going to do them virtually. And although we're getting more and more used to virtual things, it's a little bit anxiety provoking to think about doing something so intimate and personal as an interview via Zoom or some other mechanism. It's also really troubling from our program's point of view, because we're trying to get across the culture of Iowa City and the culture of our program. And it's hard to do that via Zoom, I think. So those are the things that are making us anxious, and I think those are the things that are making the medical students anxious.
Nandini, that's a great point, and we'll get to virtual interviews and kind of how to construct a virtual interview when you're a program in a smaller location like Iowa City, or in your case, in Davis, California. I know that applications, they moved the target date back a little bit for applicants. From a program perspective, what have they told you about, you know, scheduling interviews this year? Are you restricted to certain dates? And with virtual interviews, is it going to be spread over as many dates as you like? Is there any sort of guideline at this point?
Yeah, good point. So again, just to kind of add on to what Tom just mentioned about the biggest change being virtual, the second sort of subsidiary change is the timing. So I think recognizing that applicants may be trying to get their applications together on a different timeline, the target date for application completion has been pushed to September 15th. Normally it's September 1st, so that adds 2 weeks to that deadline. And then we're allowing interviews to go a little bit longer, and rank list submission deadline has been moved to January 25th. Normally it's early January. And then match results are going to be available February 1st, which again is a little bit later than usual. So everything's been sort of shifted, acknowledging how challenging application completion is in light of the pandemic. In terms of scheduling, I believe the SF Match is going to try to centralize interview scheduling for our applicants this year using something called the Interview Scheduler. And so that's a way of centralizing the process of scheduling interviews to avoid overlaps and scheduling on multiple on the same day, et cetera. So that's something that's going to be rolled out this year.
Chris, any thoughts on anything else you've heard? And then let's kind of transition to talking a little bit from the program perspective, how to approach a virtual interview.
Sure. Let me just say that piggybacking on Nandini's comments of the deadline being pushed back, I think it gives the medical students a little bit more of an opportunity to put some of their application together where they felt things might be a little bit kind of hanging in the air during the COVID period. It allows them opportunity to finish up on some projects that they may have started and not had an opportunity to finish. It also gives them a little bit of extra time to prepare for step exams. I know that a number of students who have a step one score that they're not entirely pleased with really turn to trying to perform much better on the step two CK exam. And I think that this deadline being pushed further back allows students that opportunity as well.
So let's talk a little bit about virtual interviews now and the challenges involved. Chris, you and I have had some of the discussions here in Miami, I'm sure. Tom in Iowa and Nandini and Davis on the other side of the country have had similar sort of conversations. And Chris, I'll let you kind of start that thought. As a program, if there are program directors listening, I mean, what are sort of the most important considerations for designing a virtual interview experience where you can still sort of, again, transmit the culture of your program? So you want to convey information to applicants. You want to recruit maybe certain applicants, but you also need to obtain information from applicants to make decisions about your rank list. So it's kind of a challenging, it's already challenging enough to coordinate a whole interview day, depending on the number of applicants you have coming in, the number of interviewers. It's quite a challenge. And the teams that put these together, different programs, are very impressive. Now it's a completely different, not completely different, but 80% different ballgame. What would you kind of say are the biggest things you learned kind of researching how to approach this?
Yeah, you know, I think that it's going to be a daunting task for every single ophthalmology residency program. The key is to, like Tom mentioned, be able to display your program in as good a light as possible so that the applicants can get a sense for what type of department you are. I think that the culture of the department is very critical for the applicants to be able to get a sense of. And if they're not able to get their finger on the pulse of that, it's going to be hard for them to be moved towards your program. And so some of the things that I think that many programs are working hard to create are great, clear videos that highlight the strengths of the department. I think that highlighting the facilities are going to be important through video. I think that In other words, a really good virtual tour of the department, perhaps even getting some alumni to share some thoughts through video as well to show how the training has helped them establish their career and whether those careers involved research or academic in teaching or if it's a community practice type of thing that they're going for. And then I think for the programs, getting a sense of the applicant is challenging too. And so having breakout rooms for the residents to interact with the applicants and for faculty to interact with the applicants are going to be really important. And the you know, the residency selection committee wants to get a good sense of whether the applicant is going to be a good fit for their department too. And so getting a sense of personality and work ethic is going to be challenging, and exposing the two sides as much as possible is going to be key to allowing that interchange to occur.
Tom Oding, what are you guys doing in Iowa? Anything different, anything in addition to what Chris said in terms of designing a way to kind of communicate your culture, as you said, via a virtual format?
Well, you know, in some ways, I think it's going to be an interesting advantage that we have been through the Zoom phase of educational adventures that, you know, we've all been on these webinars and so forth. And so I think we have realized that there are some things, like Chris mentioned, like bringing in alumni that we were never able to do before. And so I think we're going to try to take advantage of opportunities like that, that would potentially give people a sense of our culture. I mean, it's going to be hard, though. You know, Chris can send a bucket of sand, and Nandini can send a bottle of wine or something. I'm not sure what we're going to send to help people feel Iowa City, you know, maybe some corn maybe or something. But the real cool thing that we think about Iowa and these other two programs that are here is the, you know, the residents that are currently there. And so we're going to try to figure out as many ways as possible to give exposure to those residents. Now, the way we're trying to do this, which is a classic strategy that none of you will relate to, is, of course, I've tried to delegate this to some of our amazing senior residents, because I feel that they will have the best idea of how to connect. And so they're working on the project right now. And so they're going to try to see if they've got any ideas, because I think if I was to be in charge of this, it may have a funny feeling to it. And so we're trying to have our residents be in charge. But it's really, really important. I also think it'd be nice to send them something in the mail if they decide to interview here. So we're trying to figure out what we could send people.
Nandi, any other thoughts on top of that?
You know, I couldn't agree more with everything that's already been said. To the point about video materials that could help educate applicants about the city or the hospital system or the program itself. I might suggest maybe also working with the graduate medical education offices if they're available. I'm blessed with a really hands-on GME office, and they are helping to produce materials to talk about Sacramento, as we are not going to be sending bottles of wine to people, and many people are new to the Sacramento area. So I think that'll be really helpful. And then they're also taking on the task of producing materials about the hospital system, which I think would be useful to applicants. So just advice to programs to the extent that they can collaborate with the GME office. I think that could be helpful. And then to Tom's point about engaging residents, I couldn't agree more. We were just brainstorming casually at a resident meeting, and already got some great ideas from our residents. They're closest to this. I think they're closest to knowing what will be interesting to applicants. And so really engaging them in the process of putting materials together and putting together, you know, an image of the program would be invaluable.
And to snake this conversation back, just a specific question that came up when we were talking here about what to do with our program, Nandini. I mean, do you make your interview day shorter? I feel, is a virtual interview day more exhausting or tiring or harder to do? Like, because I feel like normally, like, we'll do an interview day here. It will be a full day. We'll have 20-something applicants per day, 3 days. We're a bigger program. But, if you know, most interview days are a full day, or sometimes it's a half day to a three-quarters day experience. It's a long time for someone to be in front of their screen doing Zoom interviews. I mean, and I don't know, it's hard because you want to have that airtime with the applicants, and you want the applicants to meet as many faculty as possible if they have a big interview committee. But are you talking about shortening the interview experience to just a couple of interviews or a couple of hours to reduce that fatigue factor?
I suspect that we haven't spoken about that in detail as yet, but I think that we will probably look at contracting some of the experience, perhaps doing more panel work as opposed to individual work, so that we reduce Zoom fatigue and also logistical fatigue, because I think that the logistics of having multiple Zoom conversations going at once can be challenging for a program coordinator. So I do imagine contracting the day a little bit, and of course that comes with you know, the risk of not being able to glean as much information. So I think we're going to have a conversation about striking that balance.
And Dr. Oding, we're going to talk about a couple of things you brought up a little later, but what about the number of applicants you interview. So I feel like each program kind of has their magical ratio. They interview X amount of applicants per spot, for example. Do you think programs are going to end up increasing the number of applicants they interview because they, you know, since you don't necessarily have a space issue, you can maybe squeeze more interviews electronically, or maybe you're more concerned to kind of see more of the pool? Do you think it'll be less? What is going to happen in terms of the number of interviews programs hand out? Because that's going to have interesting implications from the medical student side, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Well, I think that's a good question. I mean, I think you could argue on the one side that we need less interviews, because part of the reason we did a lot of interviews was to bring people to Iowa City to show them it was okay, so maybe they came back later as a fellow. So we always interviewed more people than we really needed to. So I think you could argue that. But on the other hand, it's going to be trickier, and I think changing our system too dramatically that in terms of number at the same time we're changing to a virtual interview is maybe not a great idea. So we're going to probably have a very similar number and a very similar you know, sort of schedule of seeing about 20 a day for 3 days. I think the experience of the applicant that's zooming in will be much less intense. I mean, they won't just stay here for essentially 24 hours like they did in the past. They could visit with us in and out of these various Zoom meetings, which will be, I think, less stressful for them. I think from the point of view of the committee, though, it's still going to be quite exhausting.
Chris, I think we're going to transition to the medical student side, which was actually initiated this podcast idea. Students wanting to know, they're having anxiety about how to kind of approach the process. I think that residency application process is already stressful enough, and the match system was designed for a reason, but there's a little bit of the unknown factor and kind of the uncertainty that comes with the match process. And now you have a process that's kind of being changed on the fly as an adjustment to the real world circumstances. So for medical students, and I think you and I both have kind of a perspective on this, as Nandi and Tom do, because not only are we evaluating applicants on the program side, but we mentor medical students on the other side. We're trying to help our students, you know, match well. I think there's so many challenging issues here, right? When we read applications, we've talked about this before, there's so many things that go into evaluating an applicant that are difficult to parse out. You know, you have your objective measures, like their grades and step scores, and they maybe carry some weight. You have letters of recommendation. You have research activities or rotation activities. And now many of these things are going to be disrupted. There are clinical rotations that will not happen in person. There are applicants who don't have home programs who may not be able to go and get letters of recommendation from an externship they were counting on. And from a research perspective, I initially thought COVID-19 would cause almost an arms race, because you had a bunch of medical students sitting at home at different programs who were very motivated to do projects. But on the other hand, publishing has become very, very difficult from an acceptance standpoint, given journals are seeing two or sometimes three times as many submissions relative to what they were seeing pre-COVID, just because there are people generating more and more output during this time. So on our side, it's really hard to evaluate the applications to know kind of what the standard is relative to normal years. But from the medical student side, what would you kind of say? So what are kind of the things medical students can do if they are concerned about getting letters of recommendation, if they are concerned about, hey, I can't do this rotation either in my own school or another school that I had planned on. I'm concerned that my research or my service isn't going to be what it is. I'm behind people who may have caught an interest in ophthalmology a little earlier than I am. I mean, I think back to my experience, I decided in ophthalmology in February of my third year. If that was the year that COVID-19 had hit, I probably wouldn't have matched in ophthalmology that year, because I wouldn't have had enough time to develop those connections and the research and the letters. So what is kind of your approach to mentoring students now and telling the students out there in different circumstances how to approach this year's cycle?
Sure. It's definitely a very emotional topic. And I actually tell the medical students the first thing is to stay calm and to recognize that they're not alone in this, and that there are myriad medical students in a similar position or exactly the same position, and that they should understand that the residency programs are also aware of the limitations that the medical students are facing. And so they're going to be looking at these applications from a different lens. And I have them, you know, refer to the AUPO consensus statement that was published like in the beginning of May, talking about some of the expectations and how they've been maybe a little bit different. So, for example, the AUPO mentions that there's an understanding that research projects are suspended because of COVID-19, but if you have a project that's in the works or you've had an intention on a project, you can outline that instead. And so
the same holds true for letters of recommendation. They say, well, you know, typically there's an option for three letters of recommendation. You probably usually get two letters from an ophthalmologist, but this year you only need one letter from an ophthalmologist. So there are concessions going on from the residency side. And I think the fact that the AUPO put this consensus statement out, which is something that all residencies seem to acknowledge and follow, that they should feel somewhat reassured. And as long as they're passionate about ophthalmology and as long as they're working hard towards their goal, that they're going to be fine.
Tom, your thoughts on this issue? And again, I think that one of the things we have to watch out for, I wonder if programs with less information on some applicants, because, you know, letters may be harder to obtain or maybe more generic. I just hope that this doesn't disadvantage students from quote unquote smaller schools or from smaller states relative to other years.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said none of that. Yeah, I think I agree with Chris in a lot of ways. I think number one, I think everybody's in the same boat. Everyone's in the same storm, that's for sure. Whether the boats are slightly different is another issue. But I do think that everyone's application is going to be a little bit worse this year. And I think they're all going to be worse because our own students, despite our huge program here at Iowa, our own students didn't get to rotate. So I think the home student versus away student is disparity is not as big as it might seem. I think that everyone's projects are going to be a little bit more unfinished. And I think that despite that downtime during COVID, our faculty and our residents were kind of unproductive because everyone was so anxious. And so I feel like everyone's going to be a little bit worse than in the past. And so everyone should relax about their own application a little bit. However, I would work on looking good on Zoom. I mean, it's such a thing to work on. You know, how do you look on Zoom? How does your face not look too drawn out or tired or whatever? You just need to work on those kind of things. What should I wear when I'm on Zoom? How can I look animated and passionate on Zoom? Something that I need to figure out for myself. But I think that's an obvious thing to work on. And I do think the letters is a big issue. I think people at our program have not been able to have the normal rotations, the home students. And so everyone's kind of scrambling for letters. What that means, I think, is what Chris said, and that is that we're going to have less letters from ophthalmology. We're going to have more letters from other doctors, which is fine. We can find that a lot from other specialties. So I guess basically everyone's going to be a little bit worse, and that's going to be okay.
That's a great message. And you brought up an interesting point about Zoom, because this is one of the things I've heard on our end is, you know, applicants need to be prepared. We need to be prepared. And I feel like these are things that we try to fight sometimes. Realistically, you can't, but you try to fight reading too much into these things, even in an in-person interview, you know, how someone is, are they tired? Are they not? Things like that. Are they really correlated with someone being a better resident or a better applicant than someone else? Maybe, maybe not. But I think you're right, unconsciously or consciously, those things are going to impact how a committee perceives you, probably even more now in a Zoom format. So that's a great thought to kind of practice Zoom and get your Zoom set up and everything ready and do a lot of mock interviews using that format. Nandini, any other thoughts on medical students coming who have these anxieties? You know, Dr. Oding brought up a good point about how, yeah, everyone kind of is going to be graded on a different curve maybe this year. Any other thoughts kind of drawing from what you have learned from reviewing applications?
Sure. I think I agree with what's been said. And just to reiterate, you know, I think in previous years, we've expected to see certain metrics on applications that we then use to make our assessments about extending interviews, et cetera. And I think all of us recognize that some of those metrics are just impossible to accomplish given the pandemic, whether it be, you know, finishing step two or doing the away rotations or having the number of publications expected. And so, you know, I think that we're all committed to do a holistic review of our applicants at baseline, but I think now more than ever, program directors are just understanding the unique challenges that are facing our applicants and really committing to do a holistic look at our candidates.
So I have a couple of thoughts to kind of end. And Dr. Oding, you brought up some things that we've had discussions about. And this is sort of the ethical issues that can come up with the match, right? So we want programs now don't have the opportunity to have applicants come and see their program. And we talked about this even here. I mean, what is the ACG, their SF Match, APM, what are individual programs to do? What if an applicant just decides to visit a program? Does that probably should not impact whether or not a program ranks them highly. I'm talking about outside of interviewing. A program, just an applicant just decides to visit a city, for example, and stop by the institute. And we've talked about internally here how we maybe shouldn't discourage people from doing that, because maybe people do want to see a place that they haven't lived before they rank it highly or haven't visited. But maybe there has to be some sort of statement by the program that, hey, we're going to make our list regardless, and we're going to kind of fifth freeze that list before people start coming. On the other hand, some programs do use kind of interest from the applicant to gauge how to make their rank list. Whether or not they should do that is another question. And the final question is, we talked about material sent to applicants. So the match process is designed for that not to happen originally, for programs not to feel the need to recruit applicants, because the applicants, you can argue, are in a disadvantaged population that is kind of at the other end of a power difference. And so maybe we shouldn't be sending the materials and doing things that kind of alter their decision making. On the other hand, Dr. Oding's point is valid, that if the applicants can't come and they're just seeing the program via a video, that it might be helpful for them to see certain things about the program, see the things that the program values. So I'll let you start, Dr. Oding. How do you kind of balance those things? Because that's starting to change. That match, had, for all its flaws, was designed for that purpose. And now we're getting in the area, well, we need to provide more information. We need to make sure applicants can make an informed decision, that they can maybe, if they choose to do it, they can come see a city, for example, but not make other applicants feel like, hey, I have to do this, or these materials are actually influencing my decision making.
Well, I think there's two interesting decision points. And I think as programs, we do a terrible job supporting the residents the medical students. The first decision point is, don't I apply to your program? So, you know, somebody's got to make this decision on which programs to apply to, and everybody applies to Davis and everybody applies to Bascom. And then they start looking around at other programs, and I start saying, well, how do I find out information on these programs? Is there any objective way for me to do this? And so they do things like they talk to Chris or Nandini or somebody, but there's really not great data comparing programs. And so the AUPL is trying to put a database together to help people with that initial decision of which of these 50 programs or whatever am I going to apply to. And then the second decision point is, okay, I've been offered an interview at the University of Iowa, but my God, I never even thought I would go to a place like Iowa. I'm not going to go visit Iowa. It's just a crazy place. And so we have an opportunity at that point to press a little bit, because we've already made the decision for an interview, and now we're trying to get them to say yes. Now, in the past, we've never sent anybody information at that point, but it is a tempting point, and I don't think it's out of the guidelines of the match to provide information when we're offering an interview to help people with that decision. And then the third point I should make is, at some point, people might want to tune into the virtual offerings that various programs already have, right? So we're doing Zoom meetings every day, basically. And so people might want to tune into those to try to get a sense of the culture. And so I think that's a new kind of thing. Maybe that would be useful, especially in the setting of not offering a trip to Iowa City. And then the more troubling thing, I think, is after they've come for the interview, after they had the virtual interview, then really putting the presses on and, you know, telling them if they don't come to Bascom Palmer, they'll never get a program ever again. You know, that kind of stuff that Chris does. Just kidding. I think that's the more troubling thing, is after the interview. I think the information to allow people to make decisions, to me, is just being open and honest and generous. And I think we should do more and more of that. I think it shouldn't be less, because the medical students are in an impossible position of trying to pick a program to apply to and try to pick a program to take the application, take the interview, and they have very little information.
Great points. Chris, your thoughts on the same issue?
Yeah, I think Tom nailed it. I think that it's so challenging to find the right programs to apply to. And I feel like people choose these programs on the basis of Doximity rankings or U.S. News rankings or Ophthalmology Times rankings. But those are rankings that don't necessarily apply to you. You have to identify how best you learn, whether you're someone who is an independent learner, whether you're someone who likes to have a lot of support from faculty, whether you're interested in research or not. And there are different programs for different types of learners. So I kind of tell my medical students to apply to programs that fit their learning needs and styles and not necessarily focus on the rankings. I think that the challenges that you mentioned when it comes to getting a sense of the culture, Tom, I totally support that notion of students going in to talk to the program coordinators and see what type of virtual opportunities there are to log into case conferences, grand rounds, et cetera, and also keep an eye on VISLO or VSAS for any virtual ophthalmology offerings. There are going to be some virtual rotations that are being put together, and they may not be listed today, but you never know what's going to be listed in a week from now or a month from now. And so those are some of the things that are opportunities for students to get a better sense of the program. And then in terms of kind of the students thinking that they need to do something to have that edge when it comes to making an impression on the program, I think the onus is on the program to hold true to the kind of ideals of the match, and that is, we said the visits are not necessary, and so visits should not really influence the selection committee. And if the applicants want to come and visit, well, you know, it is the next 4 years of their lives, and I find it really hard to make a decision based on just a virtual interview. I feel like I need my foot on the land of the city that I'm going to be spending my time in. So there's nothing wrong with that, but I think the onus is on the programs themselves not to disadvantage someone who decides not to do that, because they don't need that type of experience to make a decision. So those are some of my thoughts.
Nandi?
I really like answering third, because I feel like I've already gotten some great ideas from Tom and Chris. The idea of extending invitations to learning sessions that are already occurring or conferences is a really interesting one, and I think one that programs can kind of incorporate as they see fit. I know that a lot of programs do have their applicants attend a morning round or a morning conference or some such thing, and so being able to extend that invitation to applicants, I think, could be very powerful. And I couldn't agree more with Chris's comment on the onus being on the programs to kind of stand by the principles of the match and making it so that in-person visits are sort of not outlawed, but that don't have an influence on an applicant's position in the rank. And maybe that is, maybe one can do that by having the person that interfaces with the visitor who wants to have a tour of the facilities or whatnot be somebody that is not involved with residence interview, resident selection, and that kind of thing. So really separating those two so that it is very clear that an in-person visit will not advantage or disadvantage an applicant.
Nandi, do you think, and just last couple of thoughts, do you think that there should be limits, with especially with a virtual interview format, to how many interviews an applicant should go on? And the reason I bring this up is, realistically, when you have to travel from city to city, there's no applicant that's really going to go on more than maybe 20 interviews. I'm sure there's people who've broken that barrier, but really, it's just not going to happen from a travel perspective. But now you can imagine that someone could do 25 or 30 or even more. If they really are creative and OCD and they really structure and plan well, they could sit in one room for 5 weeks and do interviews every single day. And the reason I ask this is the question of this math, right? I feel like programs have each program kind of has an idea. We need to interview X amount of applicants to fill our spots. And some programs aren't necessarily concerned about filling their spots. For some programs, they are concerned about filling their spots. And I'm just saying that if a person doing 30 or 35 or 40 interviews, if programs aren't adjusting their math, then that takes away interviews, A, from an applicant who may actually attend that program, or B, changes the math for the program. So I'm just curious your thoughts. Do you think there should be limits that way, if we're not going to increase the number of interviews per program?
Yeah, I absolutely agree that having virtual interviews really adds a complicating variable, or takes away a complicating variable, maybe, in that people can, you know, theoretically do cross-country interviews back to back to back because they are no longer having to fly anywhere, stay overnight, et cetera. This is a conversation that's occurred on the PD net, and I think a conversation that's occurring at the level of the AUPO as to whether interviews, there should be a limit to the number of interviews so that we don't end up with the same small number of applicants interviewing at multiple programs and taking away spaces from strong applicants who might not be able to do so. So yes, I think that for this circumstance in particular, I think it makes abundant sense to place a limit on the number of interviews, and I think that there will be some recommendations coming forward.
We're going to finish with some final thoughts from the group, and I'll kind of go around, we'll wrap around. Tom, final thoughts for, again, for applicants and or people involved in program leadership about this year's cycle before we break?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. It is an area of anxiety for both the applicants and the programs. I think what we all have to do is just realize that a year ago, I was thinking about doing virtual interviews anyway, because I was thinking how ridiculous it was for people to have to travel to Iowa in the middle of the snow, and I was thinking about how ridiculously expensive it was for our applicants to have to fly for all these interviews. So like many other things in COVID, this maybe just accelerated a trend that was existing to some extent, or a small little seed of a trend. And so it may be a great thing because everyone's saving money, and so we'll figure it out and we'll work together, and it'll probably be very, very fair, and it'll probably we'll probably uncover some real cool diamonds in the rough. And if you're one of those diamonds in the rough out there, I want you to just try to display your passion in your personal statement and display your passion when you have your little Zoom interview. And we're looking for you. Just like you're looking for us, we're looking for you.
Chris, actually, I'm going to break this order because Nandi is just going third. It's such an advantage, as she pointed out. Nandi, you can go second and then Chris will go
third. Oh, no. To Tom's point, I think we are all in this together, and there is anxiety on all sides, on the sides of the programs, to figure out how best we can communicate and share our features with our applicants, and on the side of the applicants, of course, in putting together their applications under these kind of unusual circumstances. So really just to reiterate the words of reassurance that we recognize how challenging this time is, and we're going to, you know, take that perspective to our application review and our interview process, really kind of understand what our medical students are going through.
And Chris?
Yeah, I think that all those points are fantastic. My message to the medical students, if you're passionate about ophthalmology and you're convinced that this is the career for you, just take a deep breath, go through the process, and trust the process. And I think with support of your mentors, you're going to do just fine. And I think for the programs, what I can say is probably the same exact thing. But on top of that, it's going to be so important for programs to properly market themselves. And I just hope that everyone takes the time to do their due diligence to do that, to do a good job there. And I think a big key as well is going to be practice running your virtual interview before actually doing the performance day for your applicants, to make sure that you have a good flow. You want to look organized. You want to look professional. And since this is going to be our first time doing this type of interview, practice makes perfect. So do a dry run on your faculty and your residents first before, you know, going all out with the applicants.
Great advice from the group. And I'm not going to impose on this group with a basketball conversation like I sometimes do, but Chris, you saying trust the process just perked up my ears. The people who follow basketball know that phrase very well. And I think Dr. Oding's point will be fascinating, which will be maybe we will find that picking without an in-person interview, selecting applicants and programs without an in-person interview, is just as good or as better. And maybe we've been overvaluing in-person interviews, which has been discussed in other fields, including in sports that do drafts. So Nandi Gandhi, Tom Oding, Chris Alavia, thanks again for your time. Thanks for your wisdom. And I'm sure we'll be hearing more, and it might be helpful to have this group come back as a post-mortem after this is all done and kind of talking about how the process will be. Very fascinating to see how the next 6 to 7 months go in terms of residency applications and residency education.
Thanks so much,
Thanks so much, Jay.
Inviting me.
Thank you, Jay.
Have a great day, guys. Take care.
Thank you, Jay.
As always, you can find this episode and all prior episodes on our website, retinapodcast.com. That's RETINAPodcast.com. All 243 episodes can be found there, sorted by category. In addition, you will find links to subscribe to get updates on the most recent episodes in your email inbox. I like to access the episodes via my Apple Podcasts app on my mobile device. We're also in the Android store. Remember that you can find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Retina Podcast. And again, to contact us, you can always email us directly at retinapodcast@gmail.com. We love the reviews we receive in the Apple Podcasts and Android Podcasts app, so please leave reviews. They're very helpful for us as we go forward. Many thanks to Drs. Gandhi, Alabiad, and Edding for joining me for this episode. Thank yous to Dr. Louis Kai, Dr. Angela Chang, and Dr. Michael Venicasa for putting together this episode and the accompanying social media. Listeners, thank you for what you do on a daily basis, the articles you read and publish, and the conversations you inspire here each week. This is Jay Schreeder, signing off.
Feeling.
This is straight from the cutter's mouth.